happened is, you know, I started to understand that there was a whole undercurrent, basically, of people healing from autism. Some of my kids that I work with, they have anxiety, really bad anxiety. And of course, you know, you talk about how many people in the United States right now, and this is just a number, but I think it's 1 in 4 are on antipsychotic medications for their anxiety, fear, depression, these kind of things. So I believe a lot of us have parasites, you know, really out of control. Everybody seems to have something that we don't really have. Like the one that doesn't have autism still messed up somehow. These autism doctors are making somewhere between $600 and $1,000 an hour just to do lab testing, to give them some supplements, a little bit of Nystatin, a little Diflucan, and then send them home for 4 to 6 months and come back for a refill. And, you know, you keep the thing going. There's, you know, 1 in 40 kids with autism, 1 in 60 kids with autism. So you've got a pretty good business going. So
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today, we're going to be talking about autism and healing autism. We have Kiri Rivera coming on the program, and her protocol and method has, to date, they have completely eliminated the symptoms of autism in 369 people, and thousands of people have seen improvements. Now, people have been attacking her, calling her a quack, and all these things. But her method has the numbers I just told you, and the methods of the people calling her a quack have zero proof of anybody improving. So I needed to look at this and say, what's going on here? Now, it's she comes out and tells you, it's not going to cure 100% of the people, and there are some people that don't respond, but we are seeing amazing results in a lot of people. And she'll explain it and talk about what it is. Her adversaries, the people who are attacking her, are saying that she's preying on desperate parents, and they're just giving them a line of baloney, and they're quacks and things. And yeah, there are a lot of desperate parents, and somebody could take advantage of them. But after reading her stuff and seeing and talking to people, I'm seeing that there are people and children that are making improvements, and they're seeing they may not be fully recovered, but they'll get their speech back, or they'll go from having no immunities, no reaction, your body's not working at all, to starting to get fevers and starting to kill some of these problems that you're having, and your immunity starts working again, and they're seeing a much more alert children and much better kids that are much more aware. Might not fully recover, but they're seeing improvements. So it's an amazing step in the right direction of starting to figure out what's really going on. And again, comparing to what's going on in the alternative, which is do nothing, or this, which they're seeing some kind of results, I think this is pretty promising. And I, you know, there's other things that are going on and other people trying to make a difference, but hers is making a difference for a lot of people. And so I want to get into that interview now with Kiri Rivera. Hi, Kiri. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for inviting me. It's really exciting to be here.
Well, you have you're carving new trails. You're blasting new trails. When it comes to autism, you have a unique paradigm changing look at how to deal with this, and you've had some incredible results, which I want to talk about. But before we get into that, can you share your background with us and how and why you got involved in the autism epidemic?
Well, my son, unfortunately, was vaccine injured in 2002. He really lost his eye contact and just started to fall away. And then by 2.5, he was totally nonverbal. And of course, the next year was, you know, just everybody in the house going crazy, yelling at each other, like nobody understood what was happening. And again, my son was born in 2000, so he's now 17 years old. So this happened many, many years ago when really autism wasn't so frequent, so prevalent. So it was a very unknown situation. Of course, I lived in Mexico at the time. The father of my children is Mexican. So the doctor would tell me, well, you live in a bilingual home. So the fact that he's not talking, even though nobody said, well, he lost his speech, you know, it's not normal at all to lose your speech. But anyway, like, oh, well, he's going to start talking. And they just kept making excuses, you know, the baby of the family. Oh, he's spoiled. Oh, he's anyway. Finally, we get a diagnosis from somebody who came as like a tourist, basically, to a tourist destination where I lived at the time. And she said, you know, does he do this and this and this? And of course, he ran in circles, squealed like a dolphin, you know, didn't sleep, drooled, cried. It was a real nightmare. And she says, does he do all these things? Yes, he does all these things. And she says, well, you know, your style is autism. And that was March 14, 2004. From that day on, basically started looking into what possibilities there were to heal my son, because I couldn't believe that, you know, my son had autism. He was born fine. And he had this long period of time where he was developing completely neurotypically. And then, of course, when he was diagnosed, someone said to me, oh, I know about this diet. And they told, oh, there's gluten-free, casein-free. So I literally, in 3 days, put him on a gluten-free, casein-free diet. And he started to say three words. So I was like, wow, there's something going on here. I mean, yeah, it was a big difference. And then, of course, my mother was trying to get me an appointment with the head guy at University of Chicago, who's an expert on autism. And when I finally got a hold of him, because he knew somebody that my mother knew, finally got a hold of him. It's like, oh, the diet doesn't work. Oh, it doesn't matter. You know, there's no cure for autism. You know, this basic mentality that they were preaching at the time. But he was also trying to fill some institution that he was the head of with a bunch of kids. Anyway, so I wasn't interested in what he was doing. But some other mother contacted me and said, oh, hey, by the way, you know, again, friend of a friend, that there's this way that you can start healing your kids, that the vaccines cause autism and all this stuff. So anyway, I go see this doctor. And that was basically what happened is, you know, I started to understand that there was a whole undercurrent, basically, of people healing from autism. So it's kind of the idea. If you get sick or you get damaged, typically, unless it's something we have an appendage that we lost or something like that, you can usually heal the gut, heal the brain, depending on what your tools are that you're using. So I got started because my son was vaccine injured, causing his autism.
Is he back to full health now?
My son is not fully verbal for his age. So that would be one of the biggest reasons why he would be still considered to be autistic. But he, you know, understanding their speech, but not for his age. So some of the kids, and I can just talk about the protocol a little bit, kind of jumping ahead, obviously. But there's 369 children recovered right now that we know of from chlorine dioxide. So it's working for complete recovery for some children, and then there's other kids that it just makes them better. Of course, so where my son was, you know, and of course, over the years that he's done it, he's so, you know, I mean, the change is amazing. And I work with a lot of families that are like that. Their children, for instance, maybe an older child, and it doesn't mean that there's an age, because there was a fellow who was in his 30s, early 30s, and he lost his autism diagnosis as well. So it's not really like age limiting. Well, you know, if the body wants to heal, and I know that you do this kind of thing, you know, you do interviews with people that are kind of out there doing stuff that a lot of people have said can't happen, but you know, the body wants to heal. So if you give it all the tools to heal, like, for instance, there's people doing ketogenic diet with different things to cure cancer, for instance, the incurable, right? Or autism. So if you're doing all the right things to let the body heal itself, we can get those results.
Okay. So the man that was in his 30s that had autism, now, did he have severe autism? Like, he couldn't talk, I mean, he's kind of in his own little world, and then went back to a normal functioning adult. I mean, he had to learn stuff, I'm assuming, and things, but...
Well, they're really learning all along. I mean, they're not out, they might seem like they're not present, but they really are present, first of all. I mean, even if they're not even looking or whatever, they're still able to communicate using tablets and things like this. But this fellow who's in his early 30s, who lost his autism diagnosis, he mostly had what we call PANDAS. It's a pediatric, well, obviously it wasn't pediatric at the time, but it's a strep bacteria, which causes very violent behaviors. And so that is actually quite, I can't say it's easy, but it is very straightforward how to get rid of it. It's laborious, but it actually works. And so all of his bad behaviors went away. So he was verbal. And most of my PANDAS kids, as pediatric, autoimmune, neuropsychiatric, strep bacteria, most of them are verbal. So if you can get the behaviors to go away, you pretty much don't have anything of the autism.
Oh, wow. Okay. So how about the severe cases where the kids are, you know, they appear like they're in their own little world. I guess you're saying they're learning all along. They can't speak. Or even like Rain Man type, you know. Do those?
Yeah, I'm not getting the Rain Man types. I'm really not. You really don't see that. It's, you know, that's one in like 100,000 or something. It's a minuscule amount. The kids that we're seeing right now are mostly all vaccine injured. Or every parent will pretty much tell you, like, after the vaccine, my kid just wasn't okay, which causes brain inflammation. And so some of the same things, the gut is destroyed from the vaccines, the viruses, the things like this. So you get overgrowth of candida, overgrowth of bacteria. So there's a lot of things that start to go haywire in the body.
So yeah, it's so an immune problem that makes the parasites and other things go crazy, and then that affects the brain, and then you can't deal with it until you get rid of those things and rebalance out your whole system.
Yeah, basically, because most everybody is saying it usually happens after, for instance, I have some kids that are not vaccinated, very few, but I have some that are not vaccinated. And it's typically after a round of antibiotics or after a circumcision at 9 or 12 months. These kind of things, you know, some sort of some type of allopathic treatment has come into their bodies. So it's some sort of something that shuts the immune system down. And then, of course, you get pathogen overgrowth. It's kind of like anarchy. You know, you got all the bad guys running around doing whatever they want to do. So you've your viruses, your bacteria, your candida, your parasites, all kind of doing whatever they want to do. And then, of course, there's little heavy metals and everything. So all the biofilm has heavy metals. The parasites carry heavy metals with it. So it's just a, you know, a buffet of toxicity, of pathogens.
Well, do you think all of us, I know this is getting a little bit off track, but do you think all of us have a little bit of issue going on that we could all benefit from reducing whatever problem we have? Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, Sarah. I really do. And, you know, when they talk about, for instance, some of my kids that I work with, they have anxiety, really bad anxiety. And of course, you know, you talk about how many people in the United States right now, and this is just a number, but I think it's 1 in 4 are on antipsychotic medications for their anxiety, fear, depression, these kind of things. So I believe a lot of us have parasites, you know, really out of control. But basically, so you can do the symptoms, you know, do you have anxiety, depression, fear, you know, kind of irrational fears of things like, you know, fears of flying so bad that you won't get on a plane, for instance, or panic attacks here and there. And a lot of people are having these kind of things. And it's just, you know, parasite overgrowth. And of course, as Dr. Stephanie Seneff, she talks about glyphosate. And glyphosate, no, it doesn't just, you know, kill the plants, but it actually kills also our good flora. So we have, you know, basically anybody who's not eating organic, or is basically eating grains, you know, this grains and non-organic are really a tough situation because of this glyphosate.
Well, it's so hard because the foods that taste so good are bad. And so that's but you get addicted because those cravings are coming from the wrong parasites. But okay, so my kids, I teach at the University of Minnesota, and I have about 300 students, and I see a higher level of stress. And so I started doing research on that. And the millennials and the younger youth, their stress levels are off the chart. I mean, they're like 45% of kids are highly stressed, and another 45% are average, you know, medium stressed, way more than any other generation. And so I'm wondering if some of that has to do with that.
We're not seeing healthy kids anymore either, Sarah. This is something, you know, people say, well, what about the healthy kids? But when you talk, when I work with families, you take a case, you know, how's the brother, the sister? Oh, the sister has constipation really bad. Oh, this one bites her nails. Oh, this one, you know, grinds their teeth at night. I mean, everybody seems to have something that we don't really have. Like the one that doesn't have autism still messed up somehow.
Yeah, my daughter has some issues with her. She hates it, but her stomach's always bloated, you know, and we've been working on it. But I bet you it's like what you're saying.
Mabendazole.
Food allergies, yeah, and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get, you know, food is obviously a problem. And I think most people are grain intolerant. I think the majority of us are grain intolerant. We've only been eating grains as a society for, what, 8 or 10,000 years. So it's not like all of a sudden we can just start really doing a great job. And then, of course, because we have so much of this glyphosate on our foods, especially, like I said, if it's not organic, you got glyphosate on it. And then even if you take it one step further, and this is the part that I had an interview with Dr. Stephanie Seneff a couple of weeks ago, and she was saying, she says, yeah, but you know, you eat the beef, for instance. Okay, we're eating beef, so we're not eating the grains. But what if that cow was fed a grain that came from a glyphosate-treated field? So now we're getting it, and we're getting it everywhere. And there's antibiotics in this meat, and, you know, so we can just sit around and kind of breathe the toxic air and drink the toxic water. I mean, what are we doing? You know,
we know enough to really mess ourselves up.
Exactly. You know? We'll never eat or drink again. I know.
We're educated enough to really mess ourselves. And then the doctors get so little training on nutrition, and it's so crazy.
Yeah. Parasites and nutrition are the things that they never really get any training on whatsoever. I think it's like, you know, a few hours a day. I've talked to several people that I know who are doctors, and I'll say, you know, how long was your training in nutrition? And they were like, we went to lunch with a dietitian one day and had to pick out a healthy meal. That was one. And then the other one is parasites. Oh, yeah, you know, just ask them if they've been to a third world country. And if so, just give them one pill of mebendazole, Vermox. I mean, this is not going to get rid of it, you know, and it doesn't mean you went to a third world country. I mean, my first world kids are some of the most wormy kids you've ever met. Not only do they symptomatology, they have the symptoms of, but they also have them, you know, when we got them, they're coming out the other end.
Jeez. Okay. So how many kids to date have you been able to, with your method, have been able to reverse the effects of autism?
We know, since I started in 2010, August 2010, we know of 369 children who have lost the autism diagnosis between the age of 2 years old and 32 years old.
Wow. Okay. So how many kids or people are you working with at a time? And could it be a lot more, or is there just certain types of autism that work?
I think there's a few factors. First of all, in Facebook groups alone, because a lot of the parents of the recovered kids stick around and moderate Facebook groups, and there's Facebook groups in many different languages, from English, Spanish, Portuguese, Arabic. The book has been translated to many languages. Right now it's coming out in Turkish and Chinese. There's a lot of that, but also there's a lot of inconsistencies. You know, diet is not always correct, and sometimes it takes time. This is not something that can actually be fixed. It's, you know, there's some kids, like if you start a child who's maybe 18 months old on the protocol, they're just recently diagnosed, you had a pretty good chance of that child in the next 6 to 8 months losing the autism diagnosis altogether. That's not that difficult to do. I know that I had a mom, it was 26 months of protocol and her child recovered. It just kind of depends on the person. And again, there's a lot of stuff out there to do. So I think parents want to do, I know as a parent, you want to do everything for your child and you want to do it at once. And the problem is the body doesn't heal like that. It's almost like there's noise distortion, you know, it's like it can't fine tune because there's just too much input all the time. So that's why I think a lot of us kind of lose our way. So if you keep the protocol really, really basic, really, really simple, so we stay with the diet. And when I say diet, you know, a lot of people think gluten-free, casein-free is okay. So rice and bean and corns and fruit, and it's not okay. We're just feeding the pathogens with the simple carbohydrate. So we have to take it to another level. So the diet has to change as well. So those days of this gluten-free, casein-free diet, so the gluten, you know, you go to the store and there's beautiful, I mean, they can do everything gluten-free these days, cookies, cakes, candies, all this stuff is really no. It's a no, because they're just going to feed, because they're still at the end, they're made with like rice and potato and these kind of things, which are all just sugars in the body.
And so we're feeding the parasites. Good.
Oh, we feed the parasites in the candy. You know, we're fermenting. Like we talk about those big bloated tummies that our kids get. And when you put them on a high fat, low, basically no simple carbohydrate diet. So they're getting basically complex carbohydrates in the form of nuts, seeds, and vegetables. And you have a high fat, like MCT oil, coconut oil, olive oil, ghee without casein. So we want to get the good fats in there to heal the gut and the brain. And of course, you just don't want to be giving the sugars like are in the fruits. And of course, there's a great, somebody sent me a book and it was called Fat of the Land. It was from the early 1900s. And it's about it was a documentary. A man went to Baffin and he lived with the Inuit, the Eskimo type of people. They never ate fruit. They never ate vegetables. They just ate a lot of fat. So they were eating like walrus and, you know, this kind of fatty fish and everything. And of course, they would give the loin, like the tenderloin of the animal, when they would take down a caribou or something, they'd give that to the dogs because it didn't have the fat. So the dogs, they get their muscle from that. But these really tough guys, you know, they're able to like wrestle a walrus for dinner. They were eating a very high fat diet. And that was really, and so when they came back, the people doing the documentary, they studied them at Bellevue Hospital. And there's actually, like I said, the story goes on about them. And it's very interesting. They were very, very healthy. They died, you know, 90 some years old, and they maintained a high fat and very, very low carbohydrate diet.
Interesting. Okay. So your method, is it pretty much just all a diet?
No, because you have to have the chlorine dioxide to do it. For instance, there are people that are doing great diets, maybe a GAPS diet or a ketogenic diet, or you know, these low carbohydrate, high fat diets, which are really gut brain healing diets. They're wonderful. But alone, you cannot kill the pathogens. And you have to kill all the pathogens. So you've got virus, you have bacteria, you have heavy metals, you have, you know, that's not a parasite or pathogen, but anyway, so parasites. So all of these pathogens have to die somehow. But if you go allopathically, they're going to give you an antibiotic, an antifungal, an antiviral. Well, all these things are drugs. So they're going to do more damage to the gut. So we really don't get ahead. We're killing some pathogens, but we're doing more damage to the gut. So this cycle we're never going to get out of. And the nice thing with chlorine dioxide is that it's a pro-oxidant from the same family of ozone, oxygen, and hydrogen peroxide. So it has a simple function as a positively charged molecule that basically chases down the negatively charged pathogen and destroys it, you know, rips the ions off of the wall of the molecule. So that's basically how it works.
Would it work have you investigated carbon 60, C60?
I don't know this. I've never heard of this before.
Because I'm wondering, you should look into that, because I'm wondering if it's this carbon 60 would have a lot of the same effects, because it goes in and cleans up your body too. I would be interested. I'm not sure if it does or not, but I would be really interested to see if there's a connection there.
Yeah, that, I'll look. I'll Google.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, it would be nice, because there's always some, you know, I don't think until we're recovering every single child, every single time, we need more answers, and people need to come together to get this solved. And I think that that's one of, and there's things that are going to work for some children. For instance, hyperbaric chamber takes down brain inflammation. For instance, some kids, this has been amazing. It's been one of the last steps that they've taken before they got the full recovery. Then there's some kids that recover without hyperbarics, but they needed chelation as well. But you always, these are like add-ons.
What's a hyperbaric?
Hyperbaric chamber, it looks like a big submarine is what it looks like. And they're able to compress oxygen. So it's 100% O2 under pressure. So it can get, as you breathe it, it goes throughout your whole body, kind of like Coca-Cola has bubbles, basically. And it goes throughout your whole body. And oxygen, which is also a pro-oxidant like chlorine dioxide, but it can get into the brain and it takes down inflammation in the brain. And a lot of the kids suffered inflammation from the vaccines, for instance.
So getting rid of inflammation is one of the critical factors.
Especially in the brain, because it's like when you sprain your ankle, you know, you have this little tendon or ligament that's been pulled, but your ankle's the size of a watermelon. Why? Because, you know, it's a protective measure. But imagine that happens in the brain. So you have some sort of course, because the gluten and casein, they were flowing to the brain at some point where we were eating poorly or the vaccinations caused inflammation. So in order to get rid of it, we have to change our diet, because that can still be causing brain inflammation on a daily basis. And then in order to take down the inflammation they received from the vaccines, for instance, that will also help a lot.
So now, we get rid of the inflammation. That's one factor. And then you also get rid of the candida and the other parasites that are in your body. Now, can you do one or the other with it working? Or do you have to have both factors happening?
Well, you definitely don't have to have hyperbarics with the chlorine dioxide. So I've seen of the children that have recovered, I have watched the children recover some with just diet and chlorine dioxide. So like in Venezuela, for instance. Many of these kids didn't have access to chelators or supplements or any other thing, but they had a decent diet. And of course, they're very low in a Monsanto product, because Monsanto's from the U.S. And Venezuela, of course, doesn't have much to do with the United States, that bad situation politically. They don't get along. So in that regard, it's been beneficial to Venezuela, because they don't have really much of this Monsanto product there. So they're able to eat other foods and not have so much damage. So I did a conference in 2011. It was March of 2011 with Venciendo el Autismo is the name of the foundation there. And there were about 1,000 people in attendance at the conference. Within 6 months, by the time we did the next conference, there were 28 children from Venezuela that have recovered with the chlorine dioxide diet and pretty much nothing else.
How do you get the chlorine dioxide? Where do you get that?
It's a mix of... But anywhere, they sell it online. But any country in the world. I work with people in 75 different countries. I mean, you name the country, Jordan, Qatar, Australia, Canada, U.S., Mexico, wherever. And they're able to get the chlorine dioxide, because it's usually available in every country, because they use it in the water supply. So that's one of the things they don't tell us. They just, it's bad for you. And of course, not bad for you. It kills the biofilm, killing the pathogens. So it makes water drinkable, healthy, safe.
Well, how about there's a doctor that's having people take turpentine, which is actually a natural syrup or a natural...
Dr. Jennifer Daniels.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And because it kills a candida, and she does it with sugar, because the sugar attracts a candida, and then the turpentine kills it.
Yes.
And in small amounts, it doesn't hurt us at all. I mean, it just comes out of an elm tree or some kind of tree. And people think turpentine is a major
exactly.
chemical.
Yeah, exactly. This is the whole point.
Yeah. Now, would that
but
help?
Everything the right dose is safe. Everything in the wrong dose is poison. So the poison is just it depends on the dose. And I think Dr. Jennifer Daniels, I agree with her. I mean, everything in its dose is correct. Like, did you ever hear a radio talk show? They had somebody drinking, I don't know how many gallons of water, and they died. Water's good for us, but, you know, several gallons at a time is really bad for us. So I think that's what it goes. And yeah, turpentine is good for getting rid of candida. I believe chlorine dioxide is more efficient on the long run. But at the same time, I've heard positive things from people as well.
But now you need to do, because turpentine just gets rid of candida. It doesn't get rid of the other parasites and things that you need to get rid
right.
of. Okay. Whereas chlorine dioxide.
I don't use it. So I don't need it.
So, okay. Right. But that will get rid of like the whole plethora of problems or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah,
I could absolutely. Take it. My daughter could take it. I mean, because she could get rid of her inflammation in her gut, just what she has going on, her bloating and everything else. Or we could all take it to get rid of our sugar cravings. And I mean, we got autism we want to take care of, which is so important. But we also have all these sicknesses. And so that would help us as well.
Right.
Okay. And is it very expensive?
I believe so. And you know, a lot of the bloating, it's really cheap. I think it's $30 for the bottles and they last about 4 months.
Wow. Okay. So what were you saying about the bloating? I didn't want to cut you off.
The bloating, a lot of times the bloating are parasites. And again, this goes back to, you know, your gut flora is really messed up from our non-organic food, or the problem is really what they're putting on the food, you know, this pesticide stuff that, you know, kills the weeds, but it also goes up into the fiber of the grains. And of course, we're ingesting this and it's doing the same thing to our gut flora, which is also a plant. So it kills the plants in the field, it kills the plants in our gut. And now, of course, we have pathogen overload. And of course, most of our kids have suffered from the vaccine schedule, as well as, you know, food that's just not really good for our immune system and all the toxins and stuff in the food. So yes, I believe that parasites are also a problem. And parasites, because of the largest pathogen, they're a little bit more challenging to kill. Chlorine dioxide can weaken them. It can kill them. But we also, I believe, need to do a little bit more, like something like mebendazole or something to get rid of the parasites. But in addition to, but the chlorine dioxide is a great start.
Okay. Well, so there's addition to, it would be diet, the chlorine dioxide, and then there's what? Can you take in
some
addition?
Parasite protocol? Yeah.
Okay.
Protocol is based like this. It starts off with diet, and we don't really have to wait to start the chlorine dioxide, but diet is, you know, you really want to get diet
sure.
down a little bit.
Yeah.
So you've got the diet, then you've got the chlorine dioxide. You find the dose, you make sure everybody's comfortable, they're doing well. And then you add the parasite protocol, which is basically things like mebendazole, neem, stone breaker for breaking the oxalates because the parasites are defecating oxalates, a little castor oil to drive out the liver flukes from the liver. We do this 3-6 months, and then maybe we have to switch to something that's a little bit more systemic. And then from there, we can maybe add in chelators or maybe some supplements or maybe hyperbarics. So it kind of just depends on kind of where the person is at.
Now, do you have to get rid of absolutely every single parasite? Otherwise, if you don't, they can start to produce again, replicate?
What we're trying to do is we're trying to get the immune system working again. So the chlorine dioxide works at a mitochondrial level. So it is going to jumpstart the immune system, which is kind of cool because some people will get a fever in the beginning of using the chlorine dioxide. And of course, that's a response that the body didn't have when they were getting these vaccinations. They just got sick and they got autism. So now all of a sudden for like, you know, people say, oh, my child is so healthy. He's got autism, but he's never had a fever. Because the immune system is not working. You know, we got a problem here. Clean up an aisle 3, but the body's not reacting like it should be. So finally it starts to react as it should. And so we get a fever. And then all of a sudden after the fever, 7-10 days later, the kid's like much better, much more alert, maybe talking more, looking more, sleeping through the night, because we were able to bake off some of the pathogens. The immune system is starting to work with us. So it isn't just us dosing the child or us doing all the work for the child. Finally, that child's body is actually working to heal it as well. So we now have like teamwork.
Gosh, this makes so much sense. It just, I don't know why all these obvious things are just not, I mean, I love what you're talking about because it just makes sense. It's clean. Okay, so what kind of reactions are you getting from the medical establishment? Because they have to be blind not to see that there's a major issue going on and that people are sick. And so what kind of reactions are you getting?
I think that there's kind of a couple things going on. You know, there's the ones that are trying to keep their jobs instead of saying, oh yeah, just take this chlorine dioxide. And then the next day they're going to have the medical board at their door saying, your license, please get out. You know, so now they'll starve the rest of their lives. So I think that they're just playing, you know, where they have to be. And then of course, I think that there's some that are just trying to save their jobs because they're also making these autism doctors are making somewhere between $600 and $1,000 an hour just to do lab testing, to give them some supplements, a little bit of Nystatin, a little Diflucan, and then send them home for 4 to 6 months and come back for a refill. And, you know, you keep the thing going. There's, you know, 1 in 40 kids with autism, 1 in 60 kids with autism. So you've got a pretty good business going. So I think that there's some of that going. I think there's a little bit of everything. And then, of course, there's some people that in other countries, for instance, maybe not the United States, but, you know, they'll be like, oh, my doctor told me to start this. And especially Latin America, for instance, they're very open to alternative medicine. And obviously, you know, if you just, even if you take a look and you say, okay, there can be some trolls out there that are saying, oh, chlorine dioxide is bleach and it's bad and you're killing, but there's no dead kids. I mean, there's zero dead kids in the 7.5 years that the chlorine dioxide I've been using for autism. So, I mean, there is zero. So if we were bleaching the kids, as these trolls say, most ridiculous things you've ever heard, or damaging their guts, there wouldn't be 369 kids that have recovered with that. There would be zero recoveries. You'd have some dead people. So I think that there's a mix of disinformation.
Well, there's disinformation, and then there's cognitive dissonance, and then there's just, they've been trained their whole life to believe that you're a nut job, right? You're crazy. So, but the thing is, there's so many sick people, so maybe they should wake up and go, wait a minute, there's something here. But now the doctors that are really trying to make a difference and change, are they losing their license? I mean, people can't, they can only do the protocol that they're told to do, otherwise they're out. I mean, we're in a bad situation that they have to follow a protocol that's hurting everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you're following what's going on, but I think in California right now, you can't say no to a vaccine and they don't give you your paycheck and your kid can't go to school, for instance. And they just keep increasing the amount of vaccine. So there's a lot of stuff that is now out of the parents' hands. And of course, they try to scare you into believing that certain things that are good for you are bad. And they know there was a test done by the EPA in 1981 with Judith Lubers. And it just tested chlorine dioxide with humans in 1981. So they were not looking, you know, for bad things to happen. And they found that it was perfectly safe for human consumption, even at doses higher than we would use it. For instance, perfectly safe for human consumption. It's in many of the municipal water supplies. And of course, now when they realize, well, gee, there's this Jim Humble guy who's, you know, curing cancer and curing arthritis and curing lupus and curing Lyme, all these kind of things with chlorine dioxide. Those are lucrative things that we're making a lot of money off. We've got to make a, you know, a demon out of these people. And same thing with autism. You know, they're basically the exact same thing. You know, they don't want people to start going away from taking all these Ritalin, Risperdal, Strattera. I mean, I think one of these drugs, I forget which, Adderall, I think it was. I think it made $2.4 billion in its first 4 months on the market, for instance. These are just, you know, mood altering or behavior altering supplements, medicine.
I think we're at a crossroads. I think there's a lot of people that are just don't know what to do. Because we're at a crossroads of moral questioning, because there's sociopaths that don't care and they just want to make money. But that's just a certain percentage of people, right? The rest of the people that come to these conclusions and realize that we could be doing better, I know they're struggling, because this is not, only sociopaths go with just making money and hurting millions of people. And that's it's less than the majority. So the majority of people that start to become aware of this struggle with an ethical dilemma. And, you know, do I take care of my family and keep my job? Or do I, you know, people die for their country. They fight a war for their country. They give their life for their country. So risking your job isn't, I don't think, that much to ask when we have soldiers that die for their country. Now, that's a whole nother debate on why we're going to war. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, even going back, that some, I mean, when I look at this, you know, and again, it just brings it to mind, and I shouldn't even probably get into it, but one soldier who came back from war, who's in the NFL, and I don't remember his name, is Alejandro something. He stood for the national anthem while his team was kneed or something like this. They were all kneeling or whatever. And I mean, it makes tears come to your eyes and your heart really breaks, because really very few people understand what it is to stand for the truth. You're standing alone most of your time. I can tell you the last 7.5 years that I've been doing this, which is the right thing to do, like Ed Snowden said in an interview. You know, there's something that's legal and illegal, and there's something that's right and wrong. Chlorine dioxide is right. It's not illegal, but it's in this gray area where they trap you. Like, if you're not a doctor, you can't use things that heal. But can use it then? So they trap you basically, and that, so there's really nobody that can give you guidance. If there's nobody that can give you guidance, it will fizzle.
Well,
but, you know, that's
I had a theologian. He's been studying religion and theology and philosophy for, you know, decades. He works at the University of Syracuse. He's a professor. He says truth and the kingdom of God is, I mean, truth is the kingdom of God, you know, following the truth, following what's good. And you just can't get away from that. You know, whatever you believe the kingdom of God is, but, you know, just truth and being good. I mean, it just is what it is. If you want to be a good person, then that's the only path you have. Right? I mean, I'm preaching to the choir. I know I am.
I agree with you.
But I don't know what else to be.
I can't do anything else. Sarah, do anything else. I mean, we have to keep on. And you know, I believe also there's going to be a tipping point where there's going to be more people like you and I just connected recently. I didn't know who you were and you didn't know who I was. And then you have been connected with people who I know from other venues, for instance, and they speak the truth and I'm all about the truth. And, you know, thinking back to how it used to be when we used to watch fake news and get fake information and now we know the truth. And then you see so many people walking around with their heads still in the sand. And when you find people that their heads are out of the sand, we're like still seeing all the butts in the air, the other people whose head are still in the sand. But, you know, one by one, we knock the person over and we say, hey, look out here. They're like, oh, look out here. So maybe there'll be a tipping point and then we can all kind of share the, you know, the glory of the truth.
We can all toast with champagne. Hopefully. Like I've been saying lately. I hope so. I think it's cognitive dissonance. It's hard. It shakes their core. It's not easy to change and to start looking at this.
It shook us all. We all get here somehow.
Yeah, and I think that I'm disappointed that there's only 369 people that, okay, let's do the glass half full. It's amazing what you're doing. Now, the glass half empty, I would like to see a lot more. You know, I think that, you know, it would nice to be reached. And I think you're right there where there's so many different protocols and you have to stick with it in order for it to work. Now, are there some people that it does not work for? I mean, and then they will be.
Honestly, I can tell you maybe two people. There was a lady actually a couple of days ago that I just talked to, and she's doing everything right, and her son's still not well. I don't understand that situation. So, for instance, I don't know. And again, now let's go back to how the child was born. Was it cesarean section? Is there cerebral palsy? Are there other underlying things? Is the brain damage too much from the vaccine, from that inflammation? You know, there's things we can never know. Even if they do these scans of the brain, they never find problems. You know, they check the genetics. There's usually never any problems. Autism usually comes from something, you know, some environmental thing, whether it was a vaccine or whether it was medicine or whether it was this kind of thing. You know, there is a 10% factor of genetics because I will.
Go ahead. Keep going.
I will work occasionally with families that have, for instance, a child with autism. And while that child is just getting diagnosed with autism, the mother will find out she's pregnant with a second child or a third child, with another child. And then they'll be, oh, my gosh, what do I do? The child will be born. They will not vaccinate this child. And the child will start to have some symptoms of autism right around this, you know, developmental 6, 9 months, 12 months, for instance. They'll start to have some delays. Or they'll start to lose some things like pointing or eye contact might start to fade. Even the child's not vaccinated. So you say, how is this possible? Because there is a genetic factor. There is, did the mom have dental amalgams? Was the mother a big tuna fish consumer? Makeup, hair dyes, you know, all these genetically modified foods, a lot of, you know, Coke Light, you know, all these kind of things. So these are all toxins. And now these are all things we're building up in our body. And then we spend 9 months with a baby in our bodies in this toxic soup. So I think that there's a lot of things going on. I wouldn't just say, oh, it's a vaccination, period. Again, in my case, some of these things, I did have dental amalgams while I was pregnant with my kids. That's for sure. And of course, you know, I didn't eat organic food. So there's a lot of places that maybe we could have made some improvements. You know, as mothers, we can make certain improvements, you know, maybe like while we're pregnant, don't paint your nails, don't dye your hair, don't put makeup on, you know, just some of the things that we can do to stave off the possibility. Eat organic, especially as much as possible. And in some places it's very expensive or it's very hard to find, but as much as possible, that would be great.
Well, you could almost put yourself through the protocol yourself, right?
It would be great if everybody did it before. So I do know some people who did the protocol and then went ahead and had healthy babies. So they did the protocol with their child with the autism, but telling me, oh, no, I want to have more kids. That was their first child diagnosed with autism. So they, while they're healing their child, and actually most of them have done quite well, the moms that do it at the same time with their children, then gone on, like I said, to have healthy second children.
That's really interesting. Okay. So are there autism, like the Rain Man, who it's not an inflammation issue, it's not a parasite, it's something different?
It's something different. And I don't see these kids. So they're like 1 in 100,000, I think 1 in 100,000, I think the number for these Rain Man type people, which they're usually kind of a autistic savant is what they call them. They're very, very different from what we're seeing now. 1 in 68 kids with this regressive autism. You know, they were fine for a period of time. And then at some point they lost the eye contact. They stopped pointing, the drooling, the sleepless nights, the, you know, diarrhea or constipation or combination. So all these things start to happen when you had a perfectly healthy child.
So regressive autism is something different than maybe like a Rain Man where your brain structure might be different.
Right. He had, because of course the autistic savant is very unique. It's a very, very unique person. And I can't actually say I've ever met one. I don't see a lot of that. Because again, if it's 1 in 100,000, I probably haven't met one.
So what should parents do if they start to see that their kid's developing autism? I mean, what do you suggest?
First of all, I would stop vaccinating because most of these people are just vaccinating. I mean, that's, you know, one place to start. And of course, immediately start a gluten-free, casein-free diet. Just, I mean, that's going to kind of stave off the problem from getting much, much worse. And of course, I believe I would start with chlorine dioxide right away. I can give an example, a family that I work with. They have a son who has done very, very well in the protocol. And then they, of course, like I was telling you, mother was told she was pregnant with the new baby, you know, the baby that is now 9 to 10 months old, when they were just getting a diagnosis of their son. So of course there was nervousness and everything. Baby's born, certain things aren't happening. Eye contact's pretty bad and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, they start the protocol. She's doing really well. So between 6 months and 9 months, and everything is dosed on weight. So it doesn't matter the age of the individual or whether it's a dog, a cat, a person, it doesn't really matter. It's all based on weight. So she's doing great. You know, a lot of turnaround, and there's some speech, there's some, you know, all these other things are coming back. So just get started as soon as possible. Don't wait. And I think a lot of people, we wait for a real diagnosis. Like, oh, they tell me my son, also people contact me, oh, my child is 18 months old. And they're saying that they don't know for sure if it's autism, that we have to wait to get a true diagnosis. So I'm not really sure if I should start the diet or start the, don't lose time. Every single week that the child has autism, we're losing time. And like one of the things I think I mentioned to you was when my son was recently diagnosed with autism in 2004, the first thing I did was just, I mean, I didn't even do a great diet. I didn't know what I was doing, but they said, get rid of the gluten and the casein. So I just took out the gluten and casein. And just that alone, in 3 days, he started to say words again. So now why is a gluten-free diet or a casein-free diet a bad thing? It's not. So at least we can start with that if you don't want to go into further protocol. But of course, my suggestion would be just start the protocol, because in some cases, like we saw with some of these other kids in Venezuela, I mean, some of the kids were recovered in 6 months, and all they did really was diet, gluten-free, casein-free, and the chlorine dioxide.
Well, how can people learn about this? Because, you know, it's hard to really, there's a lot of detail here. So how do they learn what to do? And they can just...
Well, my book... my book is out there. My book is out there. It's called Healing the Symptoms Known as Autism. It's on Amazon. It's also on my website, which is CD, as in chlorine dioxide, cdautism.com. The book is available in English, in Spanish, Italian. It's in Portuguese. And like I said, now we have the translation coming in Chinese and Turkish. They're printing right now in Turkish, but the Chinese translation is in translation.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Now, where can they learn more about you and see what you have going on? And do you have conferences coming up? People can go see you, talk to you. Can they do a consultation?
I do consultations on Skype, and my email is carrierivera@yahoo.com. And of course, my website is cdautism.com. And of course, there's you know, buttons all there so that they can get in touch with me if they want to do a consultation. I don't do a lot of conferences because I get trolled, which is kind of a drag. It makes it a lot less fun. The other thing is, I don't think conferences are as necessary, I think, as the internet these days, because for instance, if you have a child with autism and you have $2,000, do you travel to see me at a conference or do you spend that on treatment? And again, if you have a child with autism, who are you leaving that child with? Because dad typically has to go to work, and not to be sexist, but typically most of my moms stay home. They cook, they watch the kids, they do the treatments, they drive them back and forth, and the fathers typically go out of the house for work.
It changes your lifestyle. You know,
yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, basically, it's better if we do internet conferences, which we're going to start doing in January, so that people can get really good information. And that can be in YouTube. It can be on the websites, on the channels. And we're just sharing information for people to make better decisions.
Well, I think this is fantastic, because the other alternative that parents have is just maintenance and kind of
suck it up. Yeah. Suck it up. Go have some more kids. That's what doctors used to tell you pretty much.
Well, that's terrible. No, this is my child. I love this child. It's not, I'm just not going to get a replacement kid. You know, having another kid is great too, but it's not a replacement kid. So, but this gives people an option to try something and to at least improve and to do something. I mean, I know I can't just sit around and do nothing. I'd be on a mission. If my child had autism, I would be like you. I mean, I would have been, it'd be my life mission.
Yes, it is my life mission. Absolutely. Another thing I think is also something important to know. A lot of people, I get trolled because for some reason, you know, the first step of these big corporations or these, you know, big conglomerates that are basically causing autism is to get people like me to go away, for instance. And, you know, there's a bunch of dead doctors in the United States who are treating and curing things like cancer and autism now. I think there's 78 of them, according to this Aaron. But I think one of the things that you have to look at if you are a parent listening to this right now is look at both sides. Like, look what the trolls are saying. Look what the internet's saying. Oh, it's bleach. It's bad. It's this. It's that. It's just an ignorant. They understand what chlorine dioxide does as a molecule. It's not chlorine. It's chlorine dioxide. And, you know, there can be sodium and sodium nitrate. And there's a lot of different everything. I mean, every chemical to the non-chemist. For instance, two of my friends are chemical engineers for a large oil company. And they, child with autism. And when I told her, oh my gosh, this stuff is great. It's working. And she says, oh, hold on. Let me talk to my husband. And she's like, oh yeah, of course. Okay, so how do I do this? You know? And the kid did really well. And so, but if you're a chemist, really a chemist, you understand what chlorine dioxide does. That it's from the prooxidant families. It doesn't act like chlorine, for instance, like that pool stuff. It doesn't act like that in the body, the way that it works. So there is a lot of information, and it's just a matter of following the correct trail. And when you see that there's always going to be people trying to stop good things happening, because there is always money behind it. So I just look and think and try and do something. For instance, the road most traveled, not the road less traveled. You want to be on a road of most recovery. So I don't know any other protocol, internationally speaking, not stem cells, not this, not that, that has 369 kids that have lost their autism diagnosis. And forget about the tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, who are better from having used it. You know, this goes back, you know, how many kids are better from having used it? The number's huge. We don't even know, because like I said, there's Facebook groups in excess of, I think the Arabic group is 9,000 people in it. The Turkish group has 9,000. The English group has about 9,000. Portuguese group, I don't know, several thousand.
We can either do the protocol they're telling us, which has zero healed, or we can do what you're doing, right, which at least is thousands of people better, plus 369 that we know of that are completely cured. So what do you want to do? Right. At least you get a chance.
Exactly. At least you've got your kid talking, you know, your kid sleeping, your kid is going on the, you know, doing everything normal. Like they can dress themselves, they can do everything normal. So now you've got a fully functioning person. Maybe you don't get the speech back as you would, but now let's talk about like RPM, for instance, which is a rapid prompting method where they're using they're typing the stuff out. So now one of my best friend, her son, he's totally nonverbal. He's 13 years old. And the guy speaks English, Spanish, and German. I'm sure he speaks Portuguese if they were to start doing it. I mean, because the parents speak five languages, very smart, both mother and father. But he uses a board, and he does all of his work. He says amazing, I mean, he's spiritually, the guy is, you know, heads and tails above like the Dalai Lama, and just a brilliant, brilliant soul. And he's so smart. He's so incredible. Math, he's a genius at math. Dad's an engineer, so you can imagine. But he's using this, like, this method. So now what should we do? Should we just sit there and wait till he has full speech and is fully recovered? Or should we give him all the options to keep growing his brain and sharing who he is using this RPM method, which I absolutely love this method, especially for the kids who are still, you know, they're turning 9, 10, they're still nonverbal. Well, let's go ahead and help them, because now he's going to the bathroom by himself. He's sleeping through the night. He's doing all of his things that he should be doing as a 9 or 10-year-old, whatever the age of the child is, but he's not losing his academics. Because a lot of times, oh, he can't speak, so he's an idiot. That's not our case. Our kids are very, very bright. It's just a matter of, you know, how do you test somebody who's blind? Do you give them the pen and have them write it down? No, of course not. You give them something in Braille. They're perfectly fine to do it. And the same with, you know, a nonverbal child with autism who is being treated and, you know, pathogens are under control, but still the speech never came back 100%. RPM is a great method. I'm not promoting anything, but I'm telling you, I've seen some amazing things with kids just saying, oh, I'm so glad that I have this ability to express myself or to go on learning. And it's nice.
Well, thank you so much for coming by. And your website is
what? CDAutism. Yeah, CDAutism.com. And then we're just coming out with a line of like really good ketogenic support things like MCT oil and C8, which is a whole nother topic. But, you know, doing a ketogenic diet, which is what I really recommend doing, or a modified ketogenic diet. I have a website called ketocarry.com, because it's very hard to find true C8, which is the one that doesn't cause the, you know, the disaster pants, the one that doesn't cause any kind of like, you know, bad taste, bad smells. And our kids are all about taste and smell. So you can put this MCT oil right into your food, and you can actually put the body into ketosis faster by increasing the MCT oil, and the C8 is the one you want. So you're just kind of trying to help. You know, I see a lot of empty spots that really parents, you know, they'll say to me, where do I buy this stuff? You know, and they're like, oh, you know, you can't really be sure. So now we can be sure about something. So.
Excellent. Oh, you're doing such great work. Thank you so much for joining the program.
Oh, thank you for finding me, Sarah. And thank you also for all you do. You're very impressive. And it's always nice to see people that are telling the truth out there and sharing that with the rest of us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.